On the show today, Russian President Vladimir Putin makes his first appearance at an international summit since the Wagner Group's rebellion late last month.
Putin claims the Russian people are truly united as he seeks to project confidence.
Plus, a lesson on El Nino and what the weather may have in store for us in the next few months.
Australia, parts of Southern Asia and Central America usually endure extreme heat, drought and bushfires. And increased rainfall could hit Southern America, the Horn of Africa and Central Asia.
And later, beauty salons have been told to close down in Afghanistan and the Chinese Navy is in Nigeria. We'll find out why. Today is July 5th and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Russian President Vladimir Putin met virtually with other heads of state in the Shanghai Cooperative. That's a group of Asian countries mostly allied with Russia. Putin said that Russia is united as never before, this less than 2 weeks after an armed rebellion. AP correspondent Charles Della Desma reports.
Putin claims the Russian people are truly united as he seeks to project confidence in the wake of a short-lived armed mutiny mounted by Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin. Speaking via video link from the Kremlin, Putin praised the Shanghai Cooperation Organization for playing an increasingly significant role in international affairs and making a real contribution to maintaining peace and stability. He thanked the member states for supporting the Russian authorities during the Prigozhin mutiny, saying the West had turned Ukraine into a virtually hostile state, anti-Russia. Putin has frequently lashed out at the West for its support of Ukraine in the war. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And on the subject of international summits, NATO allies are preparing to meet July 11th and 12th in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. And there's a lot to talk about as Ukraine urges the alliance to fast-track its proposed membership. All this as NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg confirmed on Tuesday that he will extend his term for another year as the West seeks to maintain unity and consistency amid Russia's aggression. Henry Ridgewell has more.
Ukraine formally applied to join NATO in September in response to Russia's proclaimed annexation of territories it invaded in the east of the country. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has called for NATO to fast-track his country's application at next week's summit. Zelensky said at the Vilnius summit, we need a very concrete and clear signal that Ukraine could become and has the right to become an equal member of NATO after the war. Ukraine's demand has the backing of several NATO members, including Britain, Poland, and the Baltic states. But some NATO allies, notably the United States and Germany, have not yet endorsed fast-tracking Ukraine's membership. There are questions such as how would NATO's Article 5 on collective self-defense apply to a country at war with Russia? Fabrice Potier, a former NATO director of policy planning.
You could imagine an agreement where Article 5 will only apply to the non-contested or the free Ukrainian territory, those under the control of Kiev, whilst those that are still contested, either by military means or politically, diplomatically, would be left outside the purview of Article 5. So I think this is a more realistic scenario, but this is exactly why I think the argument is to say, let's start that process in Vilnius.
NATO allies will also try to agree on a new investment pledge to spend at least 2% of their annual gross domestic product on defence, amid concerns some members are failing to meet the target. Meanwhile, Sweden's application to join NATO, submitted jointly with Finland in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, continues to be blocked by Turkey, which accuses Stockholm of harbouring what Ankara sees as Kurdish terrorists. Allies are hoping for a breakthrough at the summit. NATO recognised China as a challenge to its security and values for the first time at last year's summit. Western allies are unlikely to change that stance, says Potier.
However, I think what will be important in Vilnius is the meeting with the non-NATO heads of state from the Indo-Pacific regions, South Korea, Japan, New Zealand, and Australia, which I think will signal further how engaged the alliance is, at least at the political level, with the like-minded partners in the region.
NATO allies will also address new and emerging threats, including climate change, cyber, and space technologies. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The Chinese Navy is making a port call in Nigeria this week in a rare visit to West Africa, where Beijing has been seeking to expand its influence. China's ambassador to Nigeria said the five-day visit aims to deepen ties and help tackle maritime security threats in the Gulf of Guinea. Timothy Obezu reports from Abuja.
Three warships of China's People's Liberation Army fleet arrived at Nigeria's economic hub, Lagos, on Sunday, bringing about 700 sailors. The Nigerian Navy and Chinese embassy on Monday said the visit signified growing relations between Beijing and Africa, with the goal of tackling maritime security threats and maintaining stability in the Gulf of Guinea. Security analyst Chidi Omeje says it is a welcome development and an opportunity for Nigeria and Africa to address security issues.
It is important that Nigeria hold forth in such relationships because we can't really just get stuck to Western relationship alone. We have to broaden our reach. China has always been in recent history really has been a very, very important key partner to Nigeria. We need all cooperation we can get to be able to, respond to the various security challenges across our country and, of course, across the region.
China has been investing heavily in infrastructure in Africa, including Nigeria, for many years, and Nigeria is one of China's top crude oil suppliers. But the visit comes amid speculation that Beijing could be seeking to establish a naval base in the Gulf of Guinea. Last year, U.S. defense officials said they worried that such a base could threaten U.S. national security. Kabiru Adamu, an analyst with the Beacon Security Risk Management firm, agrees the visit might have undisclosed objectives.
In diplomatic practice, there is usually the stated objective and then there is the latent objective. So it's very likely that security will be discussed during the five-day visit. China has the intention of establishing a base in the West African coast, and this may be a diplomatic move by China to convince Nigeria to support that desire.
In 2016, China promised economic support for Sao Tome, a small African nation in the Atlantic Ocean, shortly after it cut ties with Taiwan. Sao Tome is located in the heart of the Gulf of Guinea, making it a potential hub for oil and gas production. Adamu says China is trying to secure its assets in Africa with a possible base.
Beijing is definitely interested in establishing, expanding its influence in Africa to protect its assets. It has invested massively in African countries pre-COVID, during COVID, and post-COVID. It would definitely want to protect those investments. And what is the best way we can do that is to strengthen security ties with African countries.
In January, Nigeria opened the Lekki Deep Sea Port in Lagos, built by state-owned China Harbor Engineering Company. Last month, the Lekki Deep Sea Port berthed a 300-meter-long vessel from China, the largest since the port was launched. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And here are some other stories we're following from around the world. Russia said Tuesday it downed five Ukrainian drones that attacked Moscow and the surrounding region. Fierce battles broke out Tuesday across the western part of Sudan's capital region as the army tried to cut off supply routes used by its rival, the Rapid Support Force. After years of speculation, Senegalese President Macky Sall shocked the nation Monday night when he announced he would not seek a third term in office. This decision is a win for democracy in West Africa, where countries have gravitated towards authoritarianism in recent years. And on Tuesday, Israeli troops began to withdraw from a Palestinian refugee camp after conducting searches for militants, as the death toll rose to 12 from the raid that began on Monday. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
The European Space Agency recently launched its Euclid spacecraft from Cape Canaveral in Florida. The ESA says Euclid's planned six-year mission will be to find out what the universe is made of and study dark energy and dark matter. Scientists theorize that 75% of the universe is made up of dark energy, 20% is dark matter, and everything we see provides only 5% of the content. Euclid will capture visible light with a wide-angle space telescope and a 600-megapixel camera that will feed a near-infrared spectrometer and photometer to create the largest and most accurate 3D map of the universe. Euclid will be joined in its study of dark energy and dark matter by NASA's Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope, scheduled for launch in late 2026. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. We're off to a Taiwanese summer camp in the U.S. to discuss how Asians are portrayed in TV and film in a few minutes. Now, it's summertime here in Washington, and it's hot, and temperatures are expected to soar across large parts of the world as the weather pattern known as El Niño has developed in the tropical Pacific. Reuters' Ilan Rubens has the details.
The El Nino weather pattern has returned, bringing surging temperatures with it.
We are likely to have one of the warmest years on record.
For the first time in 7 years, the World Meteorological Organization says El Nino has emerged in the tropical Pacific. So what exactly is it? El Nino is a natural climate pattern born out of unusually warm waters in the eastern Pacific, though scientists are not entirely sure what kicks off the cycle. It's been linked to extreme weather conditions, from tropical cyclones to heavy rainfall to severe droughts. The world's hottest year on record, 2016, coincided with a strong El Nino. And the WMO says even that record could soon be broken. WMO's head of the Regional Climate Prediction Service, Wilfred Mafuma Okia.
The tropical Pacific Ocean is currently experiencing El Nino condition. And this is a result of rapid and substantive change, both in the atmosphere and in the ocean.
So what impact could El Nino have on global temperatures? During an El Nino, the southern US sees cooler and wetter weather, while parts of the US West and Canada are warmer and drier. Australia, parts of southern Asia and Central America usually endure extreme heat, drought and bushfires. And increased rainfall could hit southern America, the Horn of Africa and Central Asia.
Last month, we issued, WMO issued what we call the 5-year outlook. So basically, we try to anticipate the climate for the period 2023 to 2027. What we know is that throughout the next 5 years, we are likely to have one of the warmest years on record.
That's Ilan Rubens of Reuters. Afghanistan's Taliban administration has ordered hundreds of female-run beauty salons to close within a month. It's the latest in a series of rules blocking women's access to employment and public spaces. VOA's Steve Miller speaks with reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad via WhatsApp.
What is happening right now in Afghanistan, the Taliban are actually trying to dismantle each and every establishment that has emerged in the country after the US-led invasion against the country 20 years ago. Because that's what the Taliban leaders have repeatedly cited in their statements and speeches, that these establishments, be it for, you know, education for women, workplaces for women, or these beauty salons, all of them are actually, they symbolize the occupation of Afghanistan when the US was here. So that seems to be the campaign, to just dismantle all these symbols. Otherwise, it makes no sense at a time of serious economic crisis in a country where there are no jobs for even men.
Ayaz, can you speak more to that? Because you mentioned the economic hardships that Afghanistan is going through. But since the Taliban came to power some 2 years ago, there has been a steady decrease in what is available to women, going to parks, having jobs, going to school. What's been the impact to families?
I mean, what we understand from the UN estimates that there are 28 million people who are in need of urgent assistance. So with these bans on women, cannot work for the United Nations and non-governmental organizations, and girls cannot go to schools, are obviously paralyzing almost half of the population of the country, which was definitely taking part in the development of Afghanistan over the last 20 years. Now with this half of the population being paralyzed in a way that they cannot participate in any economic activity, it is seriously impacting families. And it is also impacting humanitarian operations in Afghanistan, because it's a conservative society largely. And for families to be assisted properly, you need female aid workers to go to these families inside their homes. So now these bans have obviously prompted NGOs and the UN to cut down on their operations across Afghanistan.
Ayaz, really quickly, what has been the international response to this latest ban by the Taliban?
The UN deputy head of the mission in Kabul reiterated in a statement that there's going to be no compromise on, reintegrating Afghanistan into the global community under the Taliban rule as long as these bans are in place on women. So that means the stalemate is still there. The global community is not willing to recognize them. But then we see these repeated and continuous acts of defiance on part of the Taliban. And what is happening is it's the ordinary Afghans who are suffering as a result of these bans, these restrictions. And, I have been able to speak to a couple of women working in these beauty parlors. They were really crying, because they said that, their men are unable to find jobs under these critical economic situation facing Afghanistan. So that was the only income they were bringing home to feed their children. And the question these two women asked, what will they do now? How will they feed their families when their men are jobless?
That's Steve Miller speaking with Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad. In recent years, TV shows and movies featuring Asians, including Chinese Americans, have been on the rise, and many of them target younger audiences. VOA spoke to students at the Washington, D.C. Taiwanese School Summer Camp to get their thoughts. Elizabeth Lee has the story.
A cool Taiwanese treat. It's just one cultural activity that director C.C. Su hopes to teach her 13-year-old daughter and other students at this Washington, D.C. Taiwanese school summer camp. Many here are the children or grandchildren of Taiwanese immigrants. When they are not at camp, Su says she's happy these students can see people who look like them on screen. Emmanuel Roberts is Su's daughter.
I'm really enjoying the representation that is being put into the media.
C.C. Su recalls movies including Crazy Rich Asians and Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings.
Is this what you wanted?
Shang-Chi, where now Asian and Asian Americans can be superheroes.
Su can relate to some of the scenes in Disney's new TV show, American Born Chinese.
I remember having my name mispronounced. I absolutely remember having a brand new Asian student, Chinese student actually, come to my elementary school, and me getting dragged out of class to be the guide for this brand new student.
Is there a Jim Wang here?
Wang.
This is Wayne Chung.
Wei Chen.
He's a new student and he's Chinese, like you. He's going to tag along to all of your classes.
Some Hollywood productions have been accused of self-censoring to avoid angering Beijing and improving their chances of capturing the large Chinese movie market. But that seems to have changed, says San Diego State University film and television professor Brian Hu.
They realize that it's not as automatic as they thought.
And the kinds of investment and sort of kowtowing that would require was no guarantee that it was going to happen.
Because access to the Chinese market is not guaranteed.
I love a grand adventure.
Hollywood seems to stick with universal themes when telling Asian American stories. More Asian American films and shows might also be due to anti-Asian hate incidents that made headlines during the pandemic, says Chinese YouTuber Yao Zhang, who resides in Canada.
People want to show the world, some people, especially Chinese people, wants to show the world that we are not all spies.
Some of these students would like to see more characters with backgrounds like theirs. That includes Freddie Meng.
I usually just think of myself as either Asian American or Taiwanese American. I don't really identify with Chinese American that much.
Asians are the fastest growing racial and ethnic group in the U.S. There's also a growing number of Asian Americans now working in Hollywood, says a Hong Kong film studies professor, Jason Koh. He teaches at the Hong Kong Baptist University's Academy of Film.
We're seeing a new generation of talent, you know, who's kind of grown up in the industry, you know, since the 90s and 2000s, who are kind of reaching that level in the industry where they have that sway.
Again, CC Su.
We're three generations in, at least on the East Coast, where if a child wants to be something other than a doctor, lawyer, and engineer, that is acceptable. You know, we won't try to push you out of it.
Outside of camp, Sue's daughter dabbles in acting, recreationally, for now. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, visit us online at voanews.com and follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the recent United Nations Security Council briefing on the Democratic Republic of the Congo, UN Assistant Secretary General for Africa, Martha Pobee, warned that the security situation in the DRC has deteriorated. In the last months alone, hundreds of people have been killed by armed groups. Ms. Pobee said MONUSCO, the UN peacekeeping force, continues to do everything possible to fulfill its mandate to protect civilians. MONUSCO has been in the DRC since 1999, and its mandate was renewed for a year last December with the goal of the force's eventual withdrawal from the DRC. In recent months, however, the DRC government has increased calls for MONUSCO to withdraw from the country after the elections planned for December 2023. U.S. Alternative Representative for Special Political Affairs at the UN, Robert Wood, expressed concern over those calls.
MONUSCO cannot and should not stay in the DRC indefinitely. But there is broad consensus that the DRC government will have not met the benchmarks it agreed upon as the minimum conditions for MONUSCO's drawdown by the end of 2023. A precipitous withdrawal of MONUSCO would likely leave a security vacuum that state authorities are unable to fill, with devastating effects for the region's most vulnerable populations.
The humanitarian crisis, Ambassador Wood noted, is also worsening due to continued violence, resulting in 1 million internally displaced persons, an appalling escalation in gender-based violence, including conflict-related sexual violence, and immense human suffering.
To address such a pressing and urgent situation, the DRC and Great Lakes region need political will, a commitment to dialogue, and a willingness to make hard decisions and pursue much-needed reform. They also need MONUSCO.
Ambassador Wood emphasized that the United States is committed to ensuring MONUSCO can deliver on its mandate to protect civilians and assist the DRC strengthen key governance, justice, and security institutions. In order for the mission to succeed, it deserves this council's support and that of the DRC government. The people of the DRC deserve peace, said Ambassador Wood. The United States stands with them in their pursuit of a better future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Thank you.